From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, hundreds of parents, teachers, and community leaders rally at the Capitol over funding levels for rich and poor school districts. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on more potential delays in hydraulic fracturing, and the state assembly votes to raise the minimum wage. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette.
For public education kicked off at the Washington Avenue Armory, the promenade was led down State Street by the Cohoes High School marching band. More than 1,000 people rallied at the West Lawn of the Capitol. Speakers at the rally called for adequate and equitable funding for schools. Advocates expressed that their schools are in crisis and cannot afford a fifth straight year of cuts. NYSA President Dick Iannuzzi.
Today is about kids. We have an audience filled with kids. They're here looking to be sure that their education is a well-rounded education, that the resources are provided for them. This is about why we really have education. It's not about testing and it's not about just passing the time. It's about creating the future, but we can't create that future unless the governor and the legislature are providing the support we need.
Angelica Rivera is a mother of two who made the trip from Buffalo.
Our kids are our future. If we don't fund our schools, these kids are not going to be able to provide for us in the future like we need them to.
Can you talk a little bit about your own situation, your family?
My own family, I can give you an example. They went to go sign up for school last year. There's only one three-year-old program in the city. That's hundreds of kids trying to get into one school, and they don't have it. There's only a few quality, good programs in pre-K, and I'm still waiting to find out if they can get into one of them, and they're competing against hundreds of kids.
Advocates are calling for $350 million in additional school aid distributed fairly and equitably based upon student need, as well as $203 million in fiscal stabilization funds proposed by the governor to be distributed equitably through either the foundation formula or the gap elimination adjustment. In addition, the Alliance for Quality Education and New York City participants are calling for the restoration of $260 million that is threatened to be cut from New York City schools because the mayor and the union have yet to successfully negotiate a teacher evaluation system. The advocates are awaiting a response from the Cuomo administration.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Amazing week in New York State, always something to talk about politically. Let's start with your conversation this week with Lee Merengoff, director of the Marist Institute for Public Opinion, and some new numbers out on the governor. The poll finds 56% of registered voters in New York State approve of the job Andrew Cuomo is doing in office. But the Marist poll goes further to qualify, and the numbers, therefore, are a little bit down, including more liking him in New York City than upstate.
Well, yes, I'm sure part of that is the gun thing. I have enormous admiration for Cuomo's guts in doing the gun thing. I'm not one to question his motives. I think he did the right thing, and I think there was some cost to it, David. One of the things that Lee Merengoff, who I really love, is a great guy, and is a former head of the whole U.S. polling organization and professor at Marist and a brilliant man, is that they don't do what the other guys do, the easy way out, which is they say, do you like him or not? And he gets into his polling, pardon me, is in the 70s. But if you give four choices, great, good, fair, and bad, Then it comes down precipitously down into the 50s. What he told me, and I thought it was very interesting, I don't know if I know you were in the room at the time, David, but what he told me was that his polling is not as high as his father's. I had always assumed, you know, he came in, he did very well. He came after Patterson, you know, it was an easy lift, and that his numbers were higher than Mario Cuomo's, but they weren't. And that is fascinating. So if you look at the trajectory of what happens to these politicians when they come into office, they come in very high, they start to use some of their political capital, like on guns, like on gay marriage, you start to lose segments of the population. When you've lost enough segments, you lose. In Mario Cuomo's case, his big bête noir was the whole concept of the death penalty. And that, I think, is now passé. I don't think that that becomes the big thing. But what these people will have to worry about is that every time they make a political decision, they lose a group. And sometimes those groups are not the same groups. The fact that, of course, his numbers are so high, Andrew Cuomo's in New York City, just goes to show us that there is a segment of the population that continues to support him because it's a more liberal segment of the population. The upstate people tend to be a little bit more conservative. It is getting to be bluer in upstate New York, and therefore he benefits from that. But he's made some tough decisions. Now you can see that he's very worried about the fracking. And you see the assembly coming out and passing an anti-fracking moratorium for 2 years. And we see that Jeff Klein, remember him? He's the head of what some of the Democrats in the Senate call the traitors, you know, who have coalesced with the Republicans in order to help them stay in office. And he says that he's for the anti-fracking moratorium also. So if you add up his five votes and the votes in the regular Democrats, you end up getting a majority. Now, whether this thing reaches the floor or not is going to be a big test of how they're really running the Senate. It's supposed to be 50-50 between Skelos and Klein as the leaders in that coalition. But if it never reaches the floor, then we'll wonder whether or not they've been hearing from the governor on this question.
Interestingly, when you spoke with Lee Meringoff in the Marist poll, still finding that there's a mixed almost down the middle on fracking in New York.
You know, I'm so interested in that. I'll tell you why. We know that there are more people in New York City for fracking, which is, of course, predictable, since a long time ago it was determined that New York City watershed could not be contaminated by fracking. So they're looking and saying, well, if that means that the gas prices are coming down and it's not going to affect me, maybe. Whereas the upstate folks, where it's still very even, are saying, you know, this is my water. My child is going to have to drink this stuff. This is all complicated this week by the fact that the president of the United States has appointed two people to his cabinet who are frackers, therefore fracking. And so, you know, here's the president putting out his remarks that we have to be energy independent. Some people will buy it, but it's fascinating to me that the people who are partisan and very pro-Obama just tend to ignore the fact that he's for the fracking. And, you know, it's just one of those things they say, I'm just not going to even think about this thing, but I'm going to give this governor hell over it.
Well, we can't forget that the legislature for so long, the New York State legislature, was down in the polls. And it's not that they're up so much, but they have made a move upward from 23 to 30, 24 to 30 in both houses.
Well, the reason for that is that the governor has been so powerful that what he's been able to do is to ram his program through the legislature, which means they're getting stuff done. So you see things like budgets getting done on time. They finally woke up and realized that people just hated them because they couldn't do the people's business. Then you get things like the guns and the SAFE program that the governor has pushed through, the gay marriage thing. Whatever it is, it looks like people are responding to the legislature and saying, at least you're getting some things done. You're not just sitting up there and taking shots at each other. Now, one of the things that's so interesting about this is that they are still very low. We really can't be giving them the Congressional Medal of Honor for polling numbers that are in the 30s. People do not like the legislature, and there are some good reasons for it. One of them is that in the so-called Democratic small D country, we are allowing the legislature to draw their own districts, the majority party in each house. To put it mildly, that ain't right. And so that's just one example of why it doesn't work out. The second is that it seems like forever that we are seeing one legislator or another going to jail. Can't these people ever learn that when they spread this kind of dirt around, it hurts everybody in their house? And people get the image from reading the New York Post, POST, or the Daily News, NEWS, that they're all like that. Well, they're not all like that, but the dirt does tend to stick.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Assembly voted to raise the state's minimum wage to $9 an hour this week, but as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the measure is stalled in the state Senate.
Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver added yet another reason to his long list of why he thinks the state's minimum wage is too low and needs to be increased. He says we're in the midst of a jobless recovery.
The Dow Jones Industrial Average passed its all-time high, and corporate profits are as high or higher than they have ever been. Yet economic growth is weak, unemployment is high, but not because workers are enjoying big wage increases. They are not.
Speaker Silver was the first to call for an increase in the state's minimum wage over 1 year ago. He since raised the amount after President Obama proposed a $9 an hour minimum wage hike in his State of the Union speech in February. Governor Cuomo's included a minimum wage increase to $8.75 as part of his budget proposal. While the measure is still in his spending plan, there's some doubt that it will remain in the final budget agreement. Speaker Silver says that's all right with him as long as it passes by the end of the legislative session, so the higher wages can begin next January.
The important thing is that it gets done. If we can do it with the state budget, I'm all for doing it with the state budget. If it can't be done with the state budget, I'm all for doing it after the state budget, or for that matter, before the state budget. We should send it over today, and tomorrow the Senate should take it up. It won't be part of the budget as well.
That last scenario is highly unlikely, as Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos continues to express reservations about raising the minimum wage. Senator Skelos has said repeatedly he's concerned it would actually result in job losses and be an undue hardship for struggling small businesses. Speaking at a presentation to give tax breaks to the middle class, Skelos says raising the minimum wage would likely result in many teenagers losing their part-time jobs.
The last time there was a minimum wage increase by the legislature, that you had over 20% of the young people in the state actually lost their jobs. Many of those individuals in minority communities throughout the state.
Senator Skelos says a lower wage for teens and farm workers should be considered. And the Senate leader says the minimum wage, which is presently $7.25 an hour in New York, was last adjusted in 2009. He says if it were increased solely on the basis of inflation, it would still be under $8 an hour.
As against the bidding war that's going on between the governor, the Assembly, and President Obama. It just seems to be how high can you go with them?
The Senate Republicans co-lead the Senate with five breakaway Democrats known as the Independent Democratic Conference. The leader of the IDC, Senator Jeff Klein, has been a champion of raising the minimum wage. Under the Senate's power-sharing agreement, though, Senator Klein must jointly decide with Senator Skelos which bills come to the floor. Senator Klein maintains that the minimum wage should be part of the state budget.
It's not a job killer. It's a job creator. We're going to create close to 5,000 new jobs, pump $600 million back into the economy, which is going to be spent in local businesses.
Governor Cuomo, who hopes to wrap up budget talks in order to complete the spending plan by March 21st, is not ready yet to take anything out of the budget.
There's nothing in the budget and there's nothing out of the budget, and we don't have a budget.
There's been speculation that Senate Republicans might be willing to trade an agreement on raising the minimum wage in exchange for their plan to provide the middle class tax breaks that they say would cost $2 billion. $1 billion. But Speaker Silver panned that idea, saying the state enacted a middle-class tax break last year and does not have the money to do any more right now. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Two counties in New York's North Country are putting the finishing touches on resolutions expressing their opposition to the state's new gun control law. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
The resolutions being crafted have yet to determine whether the county officials will call for repeal or revision of New York's Secure Ammunition and Firearms Enforcement Act. Essex County Board of Supervisors SAFE Act Subcommittee Chair Democrat Gerald Morrow says they do not want to rush like state leaders did.
Essex County hasn't adopted a resolution to repeal that yet, because I want to make sure that I'm not like the New York State legislators and adopt something so quick that we didn't have time to look at it. So we are looking at it because, number one, this isn't going to stop the criminals from getting guns or any kind of a weapon. But also it puts unfunded mandates on the taxpayers. And also, it wasn't done through due process. Nobody had a chance to discuss it. If we let them get away with this, what's going to happen next?
Opponents of the SAFE Act attended Monday's meeting of the Board of Supervisors in Elizabethtown. Among those who spoke was retired Air Force veteran and part-time political consultant Wynne Belanger, who has worked recently for Republican candidates.
I do believe that we need gun laws. I do believe in background checks. But I also feel that this law is more persecution and more about getting more tax money than it is involving a SAFE Act. And it passed rather rapidly, not knowing all of the ramifications, the economic impact that's really bad in the state of New York. If anyone looked, those of us carrying permits don't commit the crimes. It's not right.
Board of Supervisors Chair Democrat Randy Douglas says they must decide whether the resolution should call for repeal or revision of the SAFE Act.
I do think that, you know, here in Essex County, that our people are frustrated with the way the law was written, how quickly it was passed, and some of the aspects of the law and how it would affect them regarding the magazine clip down from 10 to 7 and those sort of things. Not being a person that hunts or even has a weapon, I feel there's got to be some compromise on this issue. I think there's some common ground that can be reached, and hopefully common sense will prevail here.
The subcommittee will meet next Monday morning to consider a resolution. If it's approved, a special meeting of the full board will be held on the 18th. Meanwhile, Franklin County officials north of Essex County plan to review a resolution regarding New York's gun law this week. Board of Legislators Chair Democrat Billy Jones.
We're considering a resolution that addresses our constituents' concerns and our concerns over the SAFE Act. I'm opposed to it, and I think the majority, if not all, of the legislators are against it. And with all due respect to the Senate and the Assembly and the Governor, we're going to come up with a good resolution that states our concerns. We're opposed to certain aspects in the law, but whether we're going to ask for repeal or amend, that basically comes down into wording.
At least 36 counties have passed resolutions opposing the New York SAFE Act, and 15 counties have pending resolutions.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Meanwhile, the Dutchess County Clerk has written to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo in relation to implementing the New York Secure Ammunition and Firearms Enforcement Act, or SAFE Act. He's asking the state to reimburse Dutchess for the cost affiliated with enacting the legislation. More on that story from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
The matter for Dutchess County Clerk Bradford Kendall is the cost of processing the opt-out forms, whereby pistol permit holders may fill out a form opting out of having their names and addresses publicly disclosed in response to Freedom of Information Act requests. A spokesman for the governor has previously said the forms can be made readily available online and at no cost to counties. And while the Republican Kendall says the forms are available online in Dutchess, he says the financial burden sets in after the forms are completed.
Once the opt-out lines are filled out, they're returned to our office, and that's where the expense begins. We have to cross-index the opt-out forms. We have to forward them to the court for the licensing officer to approve or disapprove. We then have to notify the sheriff's office that they've been approved or disapproved, and then we have to attach the document to the current pistol permit license, and all that costs money.
He says so far he's received more than 2,000 requests.
Just under $16 a document. So if you do the math and take 2,000 we've received and multiply times 16, you're at $32,000 to date.
Monroe County Clerk Cheryl Dinolfo raised a similar concern recently and was issued the following statement by a spokesman for Governor Cuomo, who said, quote, "As the law clearly states, any cost related to the New York Safe Act will be covered by the state. Registration processes under the New York Safe Act will be simple and readily available online and come at no cost to localities. Any assertion that the law will pass costs down to counties is simply not based on facts and ignores what the law actually says," end of quote. Kendall references this statement in his March 4th letter to the governor. Again, here's Kendall.
Well, the governor has made it very clear, and I applaud him for it, that this is going to be done at no cost to the county. I have not yet seen where there's been a process put in place for the county to make a claim for the monies due. And so that's what the letter is all about. It's requesting him to tell Dutchess County and the rest of the county clerks across the state how they can go about claiming reimbursement for their efforts.
Democratic State Assemblyman Frank Skartatos is one of those copied on Kendall's letter. Skartatos, whose district includes the city of Poughkeepsie, says, quote, "The governor has indicated that he is open to changes to the SAFE Act that are not central to the legislative intent, but would present practical improvements." And Skartatos goes on to say that he believes if the problem stated by the Dutchess County clerk is statewide, then the governor and the legislature would consider offering assistance. In neighboring Putnam County, Republican Clerk Dennis Sant says any cost affiliated with implementing the opt-out provision has been minimal and will be absorbed at no cost to county taxpayers.
We find it to be a minimal type of investment in getting the word out on the opt-out forms and having the proper personnel here in the office to serve the public. But it hasn't been an overwhelming situation financially for Putnam County.
And he says the opt-out forms are readily available online.
We did put it immediately up on our website. I made sure that every town hall, every village hall had a packet of the opt-out forms. I made sure that every gun club in Putnam County and every dealer in Putnam County also had a stack. We probably had close to 500 as of this date fill the forms out.
He says he had to hire a temporary worker to help with the onslaught at the beginning, but overall, the process is working smoothly. A spokesman for the governor referred to the statement made to the Monroe County clerk earlier.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1310. Or just listen or podcast on the web at WAMC.org. And join us again next week at the same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gastina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.